With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Sabrina Halvorsen.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us this morning on the AgNet News Hour. Coming up later, why the wine market is still facing several headwinds, and also information on climate-smart agriculture funding for walnut growers. But our top story today, USDA Undersecretary for Trade Alexis Taylor is keying in on trade missions that could be particularly beneficial to the nation's specialty crop industries. Taylor said funding from the USDA will also help the industry with trade challenges.
We've also announced, as well as with some market development work internationally, we're doing a $100 million to support the specialty crop sector in some of the unique challenges they have to export products around the world. Oftentimes these are, while they're high value, agricultural sectors and parts of the state's agricultural economy, they're very small. There could be small acres or small number of producers. And so they don't have the sheer amount of resources that some of the larger commodity groups do. And so addressing some of those more technical barriers to trade that they experience in markets around the world is really important. And so that's why we are carving out $100 million from the Regional Agriculture Promotion Program, RAP, that we just announced to specifically support those producers in the challenges they're experiencing.
She said the $100 million from the Regional Agricultural Promotion Program, or RAP, will address some of the technical barriers to trade that the specialty crop sector experiences, such as transportation issues for highly perishable crops. In addition to the funding, Taylor is excited about several trade missions planned for 2024 that will include opportunities for businesses within the specialty crop sector. One such trip is planned for India in April. Taylor says she is particularly excited for this because just this year, the U.S. has been able to lower tariffs on 9 products, including apples from the United States, as well as chickpeas, lentils, almonds, and walnuts. Also, India has reduced tariffs on turkey, duck, blueberries, and cranberries. The Agriculture Secretary recently provided an update on new agricultural trade programs and announced the schedule for next year's USDA-led trade missions. Rod Bain continues our coverage of the plans for the 2024 trade missions.
The Regional Agricultural Promotion Program, RAP, a new tool to help expand U.S. agricultural trade opportunities. It was announced last month by USDA and Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack.
We're looking to utilize resources to continue to expand our efforts in terms of trade promotion in non-traditional markets.
These resources, referring to $1.3 billion from the Commodity Credit Corporation, to not only bolster ag trade opportunities, but also to strengthen support for trade in the specialty crop industry. The secretary emphasizes that this new program is not a competitor to other USDA trade development programs, such as the Market Access Program and Foreign Market Development Program.
It's important in order to utilize the Commodity Credit Corporation resources that is distinguishable from the regular trade promotion programs out of the Farm Bill, the MAP program, the FMD program.
At a recent visit with farm broadcasters, Secretary Vilsack announced,
"We're publishing regulations in terms of how that program will work,
with public comment being accepted on RAP until December 18th. Also at that same visit with the National Association of Farm Broadcasting, the secretary announced the schedule for 2024 USDA-led agricultural trade missions.
That is also part of our efforts to expand promotion of agricultural products here in the U.S. for export. In March, we're looking forward to a trade mission to South Korea. In April, the trade mission will be headed to India. In June, the trade mission will be in Canada. July will see us traveling to Colombia. September, we'll do an event in Vietnam, trade mission in Vietnam, which will also have some Thailand opportunities and influences. And December, we'll finish with a trip to Morocco, which will also allow us to have some Northern African nations involved.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
A key Senate Democrat issued a stern warning to House Republicans to work to avoid 2 new shutdown threats early next year in the just-enacted stopgap funding and Farm Bill extension. Senate Appropriations Chair Patty Murray reluctantly voted for the unprecedented House GOP stopgap with new shutdown deadlines of January 19th and February 2nd for different agencies. But she warned,
"If we don't want to be right back here in a few weeks facing a 1-2 punch shutdown threat, we need all of us to get serious about 1-year full spending bills."
That's a tall order given the House GOP's internal spending fights and demands that Senate Democrats agree to deeper cuts that President Biden and ousted Speaker McCarthy settled on in the spring. But Murray is not budging.
So I have an important message for Speaker Johnson and the House Republicans. We can only get these spending bills done if we are all on the same page when it comes to the top line numbers.
Numbers that House GOP hardliners want to cut further and did in the USDA annual spending bill and three others before torpedoing them over internal disagreements and opposition from Democrats. The farm bill, meantime, will have to compete for floor time and a packed calendar of election year primaries next year. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley.
It'd be my goal to push to get it done. And I would hope every member of the Senate and House Ag Committee would get it done, because if it doesn't get done early in the year, it's not going to be done. Another extension has to occur if we don't get it done early next year.
The just enacted extension continues the authorizations for most farm programs, though the National Cattlemen's Beef Association says livestock mandatory reporting again runs out on January 19th, which is the next shutdown deadline. This is the AgNet NewsHour. I am Sabrina Halverson. We will be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports, including our livestock report with Randall Wiseman, when we return. You're listening to the AgNet NewsHour. I'm Sabrina Halverson. In today's national spotlight, there's mostly good news about the winter wheat crop in USDA's latest crop progress report, and USDA reports another week of rapid corn harvesting. Gary Crawford has more.
For farmers trying to finish off the harvest,
we had our second consecutive week of mild and mostly dry weather nearly nationwide.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says that has sped up the harvest for most crops in most places.
Corn, no exception to that rule. As of November 19th, we see 93% of the U.S. acreage harvested, 2 points ahead of the five-year average of 91%.
During this past week, farmers made good headway in those states that still have a lot of corn standing.
So for Michigan, North Dakota, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, all of those five states reporting double-digit harvest progress during the week.
But not enough progress to get harvest operations in three of those states up to the five-year average pace. Producers in Michigan, for example, still have a long way to go. They've only cut 67% of their corn crop. Normally, they'd have 75% in the bin by now. Farmers in Pennsylvania and Ohio also running a little bit behind schedule. USDA has just released its final count of winter wheat planting progress,
showing 95% of the winter wheat planted on the 19th of November, 1 point behind the five-year average, 3 points behind last year's 98%.
But USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says we may be slightly behind on planting, but for emergence, that's a different story.
Most areas, even in drought-affected areas, getting enough moisture to promote emergence of the crop.
And so 87% of the crop is up as we start this week. That's a little more than average, more than this time a year ago. And finally, here are the condition ratings for the crop.
The number one production state, Kansas, coming in this week, 32% of the crop rated very poor to poor. That is reflective of a drought pocket, mainly sitting across the central and eastern part of the state. Other states above that national number of 17% very poor to poor this week include Oregon, 21%. There has been some improvement there as we've gotten some moisture into the Northwest. Also coming in this week above that national number is Texas, 20% very poor to poor this week. Even though they've had some rain in Texas recently, still dealing with some areas of drought, especially in key northern and western production areas. We are at 48% good to excellent. That's a 1 point improvement from last week. 17% very poor to poor, no change from last week.
But both numbers a lot better than a year ago, when only 32% of the crop was rated good to excellent, 33% was in poor to very poor shape. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
That's today's National Spotlight. Now here's Randall Wiseman with today's livestock report.
Well, in today's livestock news, during the recent U.S. Meat Export Federation Strategic Planning Conference, USDA Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Ag Affairs, Alexis Taylor, updated USMEF members on the Regional Agricultural Promotion Program. John Harreth has more details.
USDA has announced plans to utilize $1.3 billion from the Commodity Credit Corporation to fund the new Export Market Development Program called the Regional Agricultural Promotion Program, or RAP. USDA Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Agricultural Affairs Alexis Taylor recently spoke to the U.S. Meat Export Federation Strategic Planning Conference and explained why USDA is making the investments.
we are facing some strong headwinds in the United States. Last year was a record year of food and ag exports, I think $196 billion. But we are seeing the strength of the U.S. dollar, strong competition, particularly from South America and Brazil come online. And we need to make sure we continue to position ourselves as a leader in many markets around the world. And having resources to fund those activities, I think, is really important. At the same time, the Agriculture Trade Promotion Program, ATP, is running out next year. And so we were hearing more and more concern from our stakeholders about how some of their activities in these key markets were going to have to be rolled back in markets like Africa or Southeast Asia. And we wanted to be able to support our industry competing in those markets.
She said USDA continues to see a strong return on funds used for export market development.
What we have found, and this has been highly studied, is for every $1 we invest, we see a $24 return on increased food and ag exports. These dollars are highly leveraged with industry dollars, with an over $1 to $1 match. And so we see a lot of benefit for these dollars. We also see the industry investing their own dollars to maximize that footprint. And so from the data we see, these are great programs. They're a great investment of federal dollars, of taxpayer dollars, and we take that part quite seriously at USDA as well.
Some details of the RAP program were published November 17th and are subject to a 30-day comment period. For more, please visit usmef.org. For the U.S. Meat Export Federation, I'm John Harith.
Thanks, John. And an industry analyst says Beyond Meat may need to reach into the financial markets next year to stay in business. Ag Thunder News says the firm posted a $70.5 million net loss in the third quarter. Net revenue slid again at the plant-based meat company in quarter three, dropping 8% year over year, 26% versus the prior quarter. Beyond Meat did see positive free cash flow in the third quarter, but the company does not expect it to sustain. Industry analysts are saying that the firm is now in survival mode and will need to tap the financial markets in 2024 to stay afloat. Their CEO, Ethan Brown, says the company anticipated a modest return to growth in the third quarter that did not occur. Brown said, "We did see pockets of growth where we saw double-digit gains, but we're still disappointed with the overall results." I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West.
Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour, and it is available on both Apple and Android devices. Coming up in a few moments, we'll have today's This Land of Ours report, but first, more of the day's agriculture news, and with today's Agnet West headlines, here's Brian German.
Agricultural producers' sentiment measured by the Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer increased by 4 points to reach a total of 110. The improvement in sentiment was driven by farmers' more positive views on current farm conditions and future expectations. The index of current conditions rose by 3 points to a total of 101. At the same time, the index of future expectations also increased by 5 points to a total of 114. The October survey reflected reduced concerns about lower crop and livestock prices, and farmers felt more optimistic about their farms' financial situations compared to the previous month. Despite the positive sentiment, the Farm Capital Investment Index dropped to its lowest reading of the year at 35, with many respondents expressing hesitation due to factors like rising interest rates. The wine market is facing a variety of challenges as it relates to demand. President of Allied Grape Growers, Jeff Bitter, described the different headwinds the industry is working to navigate.
You know, one of them, of course, is just the general state of the economy and the apprehension that consumers, are kind of feeling right now. Consumer confidence is not very high. We're experiencing increased interest rates, inflation, and just kind of a general concern that we're still teetering on the edge of a potential recession. So anytime you're in that position economically, luxury goods such as wine are going to be kind of a target for consumers to cut back on. So that's one headwind. And then, of course, the younger generation has not been adopting wine at the rate perhaps previous generations did ahead of them. And that's a concern. There's so many different beverage alternatives in the marketplace.
USDA Climate Smart pilot programs present a great opportunity for growers. Director of Technical and Regulatory Affairs for the California Walnut Board and Commission, Joshua Ram, said incentives are available through the program called A Vibrant Future.
There's up to $15 million in funding available. The goal of these USDA Climate Smart Pilot Programs are to facilitate the implementation of climate smart production practices and to develop robust tools to measure inputs, outputs and yields, and put in place systems for verification, traceability, and marketing of climate smart commodities. Some practices that are available for growers to trial as part of this program are short season cover crops, nutrient management, residue and tillage management, alley cropping, water management, soil amendments, and mulches.
November 28th is Giving Tuesday, and the California FFA Foundation is launching its 7th annual Give the Gift of Blue initiative. Donors contributing $85 will provide FFA jackets, including scarves and ties, to deserving members. Blue Diamond Growers is pledging to match donations up to $25,000, amplifying the impact. President of the Agricultural Council of California and chair of the California FFA Foundation, Emily Rooney, said that in partnership with Blue Diamond, more than $374,000 has been raised, providing more than 4,800 FFA jackets to members across the state. With California FFA membership expected to pass 104,000 students, the demand for support has never been greater. More information about the California FFA Foundation's Giving Tuesday initiative is available at caliged.org/givingtuesday. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Results are out for the American Farm Bureau Federation's annual survey for Thanksgiving meal costs. Rod Bain looks into it coming up on This End of Hours.
Are you still doing your Thanksgiving meal shopping? If so, you may be pleased to find
we're down a little bit from the prior year, 4.5% down from last year by our informal survey, which is gathered from 200-something volunteers in all 50 states going out and checking those prices at their local grocery store.
Based on the American Farm Bureau Federation's 2023 edition of its annual survey to determine the cost of a full Thanksgiving meal. Farm Bureau Executive Vice President Joby Young says for the centerpiece of the meal,
turkey's down a little bit. Avian influenza was hot and heavy last year, and we've moved through some of that, so those prices have fallen.
Yet Young cautions despite the year-over-year decline in total Thanksgiving meal cost, food inflation is still reflected in the 2023 survey. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or just need to catch the news at a different time, you can subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour on your favorite podcast downloading app. This is the AgNet News Hour. I'm Sabrina Halverson, and we will return in just a moment with more agriculture news. Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour. USDA recently issued its latest Rural America at a Glance report. What were some of the findings regarding demographic and economic trends in the rural parts of our nation? Rod Bain goes inside the findings of this year's report in this edition of Agriculture USA.
It is an annual look at what is happening in rural America.
Each year, the report covers the major topics of population, often poverty, and employment.
Yet USDA economic researcher Jim Davis adds, there are usually specific topics of focus each year within the Rural America at a Glance report.
It takes a dive into a particular topic of interest.
I'm Rod Bain. Coming up, a glance at the latest trends within the rural U.S. It's the subject of this edition of Agriculture USA. A positive trend in rural population growth of late.
The rural population has continued to grow since 2020. The Census Bureau data shows the rural growth of 0.25% from July 2020 through June of 2022.
That is Jim Davis of the Agriculture Department's Economic Research Service. He is among the authors of the 2023 edition of its Rural America at a Glance report.
The Rural America at a Glance is an annual report, and it usually covers an annual summary of demographic and economic trends with additional topics that highlight current opportunities and challenges that are facing rural America.
So among the topics of focus within the annual report,
population, often poverty, and employment.
Yet each edition is unique in that specific, differing topics are studied and presented. In the case of the latest Rural America at a Glance report,
population and migration trends, poverty, housing insecurity, employment, and clean energy jobs.
Among the highlight findings within this year's report, the slight uptick in rural population growth from 2020 to 2022. Significant, according to Davis, as
this continues an important turnaround in population growth in the decade of 2010 to 2020, where annual growth rates were either negative or near zero.
As for the why behind the rise in rural populations as a whole,
we found rural growth was due primarily to net domestic migration from urban to rural areas.
In terms of rural population changes versus urban population during the time period,
urban areas, there was domestic net out migration on net. However, urban areas also continued to grow due to international net migration into cities.
And regarding rural population change by region,
net domestic migration was strongest into rural areas that are in the upper west and also in the south, and that we still have some net domestic outmigration from the Midwest and the Corn Belt.
What are some of the other takeaways from this year's Rural America at a Glance report? Jim Davis starts with,
we also find that rural poverty has been modestly declining.
He calls the progress in addressing rural poverty, as reflected in the report, meaningful. In that,
in particular, we focused on a measure of persistent poverty, which is designed to look at poverty and how it persists over a three-decade period. And what we find in the report is over the last 10 years, 9.7 fewer rural counties experienced persistent poverty compared to a decade prior.
Another finding from the 2023 Rural America at a Glance report,
we find that housing insecurity continues to be a persistent issue, particularly for low-income households.
Davis elaborates,
we investigated issues of housing insecurity, which is defined as either cost burden or low quality housing or household overcrowding. And what we found was that half of extremely low-income households experienced housing insecurity. We also found that housing insecurity was greatest for American Indian or Alaska Native and Hispanic households.
USDA economic researchers behind the report also found that rural employment has essentially recovered from the COVID-19 pandemic.
We also found that rural unemployment at 3.8% in 2022 is historically low in comparison to the last few decades.
And finally,
we look at rural clean energy jobs and find that 1% of jobs in rural America are in industries such as solar and biofuels.
Davis says in comparison to other energy sectors in rural America,
we found that total rural jobs in clean energy was around 240,000, which is similar in scale to the number of rural jobs in coal, petroleum, and natural gas at 239,000.
The latest look at rural America, USDA doing so at a glance. This has been Agriculture USA. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Food price inflation is continuing to abate. Gary Crawford has this report.
The government is out with its Consumer Price Index report tracking inflation and what happened with it during October.
Overall, this was a good report for consumers. Inflation in October was a little bit lower than expectations.
In fact, Agriculture Department economist Megan Schweitzer says for all goods and services averaged together,
prices stayed flat. So the overall rate of inflation was unchanged from September to October. And prices for all items were 3.2% higher than in October of last year.
So during October, zero inflation when you average in all goods and services in the general economy. But looking at just food prices, Megan says those did inch up last month, but not by very much.
The food prices increased by 0.3% in October and were 3.3% higher than this time last year. And food at home prices, the grocery prices, also rose by 0.3% in October. And food at home prices were 2.1% higher than this time last year.
2.1%. That 2.1% is less than expected, less than the 20-year historical average, which is
2.5%.
So food price inflation cooling down quite a bit. A look at a few food categories now. First, when COVID hit and when the war in Ukraine started, wheat prices around the world shot up by a huge amount, which later took retail cereal and bakery product prices up with them. Prices last year averaged 13% higher. Some of the monthly increases were much higher than that. And prices this year have increased every month. But now, the good news.
There was no change in the prices of cereals and bakery products in October, and prices in that category seem to be stabilizing over the past 6 months. Prices for cereals and bakery products are up 4.2% from last October, with most of that growth coming at the end of last year and early this year.
More decent news on the food front. Schweitzer says several major food groups are currently selling for less than October a year ago. Products including
eggs,
down 22%.
Fresh vegetables,
down about 2%.
Fish and seafood,
down about 1%.
And dairy products.
Those costing about 0.5% less than this time last year. So the bottom line is we did not see big price hikes for most food commodities.
But what we did see was stronger price growth for meats this month. Beef, pork, and other meats all grew by at least 1%.
And beef prices are leading the way.
They rose by 1% in October, and beef prices have increased every month so far in 2023. And beef prices are now 8.9% higher than they were a year ago. And that's the largest increase across all of the food categories that we track.
Due to drought and other issues, the nation's beef cattle herds getting smaller, sending cattle prices to near record high levels, with retail beef prices following suit. But again, in general, Megan says food price inflation is cooling down to pre-COVID levels, and next year may only be about 2%. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or just need to catch the news at a different time, you can subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour on your favorite podcast downloading app. This is the AgNet News Hour. I'm Sabrina Halverson, and we will return in just a moment with more agriculture news. Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour. I'm Sabrina Halverson. For today's interview segment, we continue talking with Stephen Finneroli, the Director of Political Affairs with the California Farm Bureau. Is there anything specific that's coming up for 2024?
24 is, I think, it's going to be a really big year. You know, something at least kind of top of mind. So Sonoma County, you know, has a proposed ballot measure that's still kind of in the qualifying phases. But the proponents of that, folks who want to, you know, put it on the ballot, it would outlaw, you know, all animal agriculture in the county. And so, you know, that would affect dairies, that would affect poultry operations. A lot of the country, you know, I think begrudgingly looks to California and they kind of say, oh gosh, you know, California, what are they doing now? But I think this is just this thing has national implications, right? If a group can qualify a measure and they can outlaw animal agriculture in a county, that sets up a recipe for them to, a playbook for them to repeat that, not only throughout the state, but throughout the country. And so again, you know, you can kind of see how that might transpire. And so, you know, that's something that I'm kind of paying attention to, helping our Sonoma County folks with. Berkeley actually has a really similar ballot measure right now. And while Berkeley isn't, you know, maybe as much of a national barometer, I think people, you know, I still look at it and I say, kind of, I look at it at least with a watchful eye, keeping tabs on it. Again, I don't know that Berkeley's the most representative of the rest of, you know, even the state, but these ideas start somewhere, and so it's important for us to be keeping tabs on them. So, you know, I think, you know, again, looking to 2024 and, you know, how I run kind of in two-year cycles kind of around elections. So in 2023, you know, so from the 22 election, we had 34 new legislators in the California legislature, and so that's about a fourth of all of the folks there. And so what that meant is building a lot of new relationships. And that, you know, I think is still something that we're working on, that I'm working on, is where folks, as we just kind of finished the first half of the session, the first year, you know, where did folks kind of land? Where did folks kind of find, you know, their lane? And I think for me, that's kind of looking at, you know, not just their voting record, but, you know, legislation that they carried and kind of where they were on certain issues. And again, it was conversations around really just like educating. So I say, you know, for context, right, so 34 new legislators last year. And then after the 24 election, we already have at least 27
new legislators that are going to come into office, right? So kind of right off the bat, within a, you know, two-year window, we're going to have half of the California state legislature is going to be new. They've never served in state government. And so that means that, you know, they're coming from, whether it's their county role, whether it's a city position, something, they aren't necessarily used to dealing with things on a statewide level. That can be tough sometimes, but, you know, there's also lots of opportunity there to, again, educate, to build these relationships. I think really to just kind of show the value of Farm Bureau, of, you know, agriculture. And like I said, you know, it's not something that, you know, I'm dogmatic about, that I look at my role and saying, you know, oh, if you don't agree with us 100% of the time, you know, we're going to cast you aside. You know, I think it's about finding that common ground and really kind of, you know, where can we work together? You know, another space that I think I get a lot of, you know, calls from members about, and, you know, California is kind of unique in this, you know, direct democracy sort of ways. You know, we have an initiative process to where, you know, citizen gathered measures can be put on the ballot. So we already have, you know, two in March that the governor put on. But in the November election, there's at least about 12 that are possible. And so right now, 12 is a lot. And I don't know that all 12 are going to make it on. There's a handful that, you know, could come off as, you know, different deals are struck. And one of those deals that were struck was around a, you know, higher minimum wage for fast food workers. But, you know, there's, I think, a lot that's going to be on the radar for 2024 in that kind of initiative space. And they aren't all things that Farm Bureau takes a position on. You know, we kind of limit ourselves to things that, you know, pertain to ag, that pertain to our members. And so, you know, one of those that we did take a position on, and it's a measure that's going to be on the ballot in 2024, is the Taxpayer Protection Act. And what that would do is it would give citizens any, whether it's city, county, you know, district, the right to vote on before new taxes and fees can be raised by different boards. So, you know, I think for farmers and ranchers, folks who, you know, they continually just get hit with higher fees every which way, you know, I think that's something that I've heard from members that they say, you know, yeah, that's great. You know, whether it's a higher pesticide tax or different fees kind of at air boards, you know, those are all things that I think folks are just kind of getting nickel and dimed on, and it adds up, right? And I think that's something that for me, for us, you know, is really important to kind of put a line in the sand and say, you know, no, this sort of stuff needs to be approved by the voters. It can't just be approved by, you know, non-elected appointed bureaucrats, folks that, you know, don't hold, they're not, you know, beholden to the voting public. So, you know, I think that's kind of a big one that's on the table. And then, you know, there were three pretty big water bills last year that, you know, kind of all of ag worked, not just ag, but, you know, water districts as well kind of worked to defeat. And so kind of looking ahead at, you know, where do the two of them kind of come back? I think that's going to be a really key issue in saying, you know, where is this going to be, you know, something that we can work with? Is there, you know, some compromise that we can find? Because if not, you know, I think that, you know, not just Farm Bureau, but, you know, our coalition partners as well, you know, we can go kind of, you know, scorched earth and say, you know, that we will do anything to protect water rights in California and for, you know, all of ag, no matter what. And then I think, you know, kind of looking ahead at early 24, you know, there's been conversations around, you know, pesticides and, you know, what that looks like from the Department of Pesticide Regulation. You know, is there an increase in the mill tax? And so, you know, we're kind of preemptively looking at that space and making sure that, you know, we are kind of mindful of that, making sure that, you know, we're kind of taking the lead ahead of time and having meetings with counties, with local legislators, and really just kind of informing them, right? I think, like I mentioned, just the number of new folks, you know, a lot of them don't have any, you know, understanding, any comprehension of what a mill tax is, and kind of, you know, informing them first, right? And having that kind of introductory meeting on the issue so that if there is, you know, a tax increase that is proposed, you know, we've already kind of built that relationship. They know, you know, what the ask is. They know, you know, where maybe that compromise might be. So I think those are all kind of, you know, things that are, that at least could come up in the next, you know, year. But I think, you know, knowing California and knowing how sometimes unpredictable it is, you know, I think it's kind of a, it's kind of a wait and see, you know, sometimes the stuff pops up and, you know, it's all about being flexible, which, you know, having members who, you know, come from ag, I think that's the definition of being a farmer is being flexible. You know, all the best laid plans don't always work out.
We are going to take a quick break and we will continue talking with Stephen Fenaroli right after this. Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour. We continue talking with Stephen Fenaroli, Director of Political Affairs with the California Farm Bureau.
Well, with talking about everything that's going on, what can the farmer who's listening, or what can the person in the agriculture industry who's listening do to really make sure that their voice is heard on these issues?
There's a number of different ways, right? I think from, gosh, and it's almost, you know, it's kind of varying based on how maybe public someone wants to be, right? So if they are that person who, you know, wants to run for office, right? And, you know, I think a lot of farmers, ranchers, you know, folks in ag, you know, they just say whether that was something that they planned for their entire life or just felt a calling to it because, you know, they were so tired of, you know, whatever kind of might have happened. I think that, you know, running for office is a great option. And I think that we look at, you know, not just in California, but we look, you know, nationally, and the title, you know, a farmer is something that's incredibly trusted by the public. You know, so we in ag, you know, are a good messenger and we are trusted by folks. And so, you know, okay, so let's say maybe that's not, you know, that's too public for you, right? Well, you know, I'd say, hey, be part of your, whatever it is, right? Your local water board, your farm bureau, you know, something, but just speak up, right? Have a voice, whether it's as simple as just clicking, you know, yes on this email, you know, whether you feel compelled to give, you know, to Farm PAC, you know, and want to have a voice. You know, I think that Farm Bureau has a lot of programs for folks to get involved. In, you know, different county farm bureaus have, you know, even more options. But, you know, I think, you know, meet with your local legislators, right? Make sure that they know who you are. There's no reason that you have to wait to, you know, do that. There's no reason that you have to go through your farm bureau or wait for someone else to do it. But, you know, talk to them when there's a problem, right? I mean, you know, talk to them when things are good. But I think that the way that I look at, you know, local government, all the way up to, you know, state and federal government is, you know, they're there to serve us, and us being kind of, you know, anyone in California. And, you know, we should take full advantage of it, right? Hey, if you don't like some, you know, whether it's a tax, a fee, or something, if, you know, you've run into some issue because, you know, one piece of government is telling you one thing, but another is telling you another, you know, talk to somebody about it, right? And let's see what we can do. And I guess, I'll, you know, one example was one of my members down in San Diego, you know, they wanted to use drones to apply pesticide, and they ran into some issues with the licensing around it. And so, you know, it was one of the bills that we ran last year in the state legislature was to kind of change the licensing around it and to make it, you know, easier to become a drone pilot. And, you know, so I just look at that and saying, you know, hey, this, you know, this farmer had an issue, you know, we kind of figured out a solution to it, right? We kind of made it all happen. And so I'd say, you know, just people have to speak up because I think ag for too long has been on the receiving end of, you know, the tough times. And again, whether that's, you know, getting nickel and dimed or, you know, just getting put through more and more regulation, you know, and everyone says, oh, farmers are resilient. Well, you know, I mean, we are, but, you know, at some point there's only so much that I think people are going to take. And I do think that we're kind of seeing that right now. You go to the Sonoma County issue about animal ag, and, you know, that is, you know, that has a lot of implications. And I think that, you know, we saw kind of from the, you know, the results of Prop 12 and, you know, some of the pork stuff that, you know, there were some times where, you know, we weren't as active as I think we could be. And I say we as kind of just all of ag. And so, you know, how are we going to how are we going to mobilize and how are we going to have a voice?
Once again, Stephen Fenaroli, Director of Political Affairs with the California Farm Bureau. This was the second part of this interview. If you've missed the first part, you can always catch it in our AgNet NewsHour podcast, available on your favorite podcast downloading apps. That is today's top agriculture news. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Thank you for sharing your morning with us.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at AgNet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halverson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the AgNet NewsHour from AgNet West. AgNet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.